get everyone together because of all of the issues going on oil and gas right now. But we'll go ahead and start. And we have with us at this point Senator Bundy, Senator Hoffman, myself, Senator Stevens. And we have Julie Bell and President Mark Hamilton on the audio conference. My plan today is to see if we can adjourn by 6:30. Unfortunately, that's an hour and a half. We need to go to legislative council meeting, and I also know that there's some other commitments out there. So I remind you that sometime in March we're planning a more extensive meeting with Julie and others. Ms. Bell, are you with us?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Senator Bundy?
Yeah, before we get started there, just want to remind you of the memo I had sent about the scholars program and hope you'll put that in the agenda one day. I know it's not a problem
Absolutely.
For this evening.
But. Certainly will. Okay, Julie Bell, are you with us?
I'm here, Senator.
Oh, hi, Julie. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your willingness to be involved in this and to make yourself available. And we have the information you sent us measuring up 2004 Alaska, as well as some slides on what you're going to be covering. Any comments you'd care to make here at the start, Julie?
Well, I really appreciate the invitation. I hope this works well for you by telephone. I wish I could be there in person and hope to do that sometime soon. Really, I just wanted to let you know that Alaska is not alone in looking very seriously at issues regarding post-secondary education and the relationship between the state and the institutions of higher education. Many, many states are engaged in that conversation this year and last year, and I think we'll be doing that again in the next couple of years. It's a timely conversation and an important one for sure.
Well, thank you, Julie. I really appreciate that. Again, your commitment to this matter, and I'm so pleased you could be with us today. Did you want to then just go through the material you have prepared?
Yeah, if that works for you, I will do that. Now, I know that you have, or were expecting to have with you, some representatives from the higher ed community. There are several senators there as well. So I think what I really want to have you do is stop me whenever you would like to probe or pursue or discuss any of the things that I might mention. And we'll just adjust to the time that we have allowed, you know, as best as we can. I definitely want to take this conversation where you all want to take it. But let me begin, and I am going to follow pretty closely to the handout of the slides that it sounds like are in front of you, which is great. To all of you that I have not met yet, my name is Julie Bell. I've been here at NCSL for 15 years now. I direct the education program. And the education program at NCSL is 12 people who work on all of the education issues you all are dealing with. And that includes kindergarten and school readiness issues, all of the issues dealing with the K-12 system. We do all the post-secondary issues, and we also deal with issues of adult education and workforce development. So we cover that whole spectrum of education issues. I also serve as NCSL's policy expert on higher education issues, which is what brings me with you this evening. My purpose tonight, as I see it, is to suggest to you a framework for the work that your committee is doing and also to address your questions. Many states, as I mentioned, are looking at higher ed reform, and we have found that a discussion that focuses on the major outcomes of a state higher education policy, which is definitely what I want to talk about, those major outcomes of what state higher education policy is, we found that discussion to be very useful and very well received by state legislators. What that means is I don't plan to focus on the performance of specific institutions in your state or on specific programs or on a lot of data and indicators, at least this evening. What I want to focus on overall are broad fundamental objectives of state higher education policy, and I want to take a quick look at how Alaska as a whole is doing. What I hope you will do next is really talk to each other about these findings, talk with your higher ed community, and really get a better, more full picture of Alaska's higher ed performance. There are clearly historical, political, structural, and other factors that make each state very different and really impact the outcomes. And I don't profess to know all of these, and I don't profess to be in a position to evaluate them. So anyway, that is how I want to proceed. There are three resources, Senator, that you mentioned that are in front of you, and these will really serve as some background information. These three pieces really get into some pretty specific numbers and data and information for some of the things that I want to talk about. But for the most part, we'll leave a lot of that information for you to look at your leisure or to probe with some of the issues that we discuss this evening. Again, please stop me if you want to talk about any of these points or discuss any of these with others who are present with you. Just to begin, the importance of higher education and why state legislators are taking the time to evaluate and really understand the performance of higher education in your state and think about policy reform that might be necessary. Well, we like to think and talk with legislators about the investment that a state makes in higher education. And the investment has returns to individuals in the state and also returns back to the state as a whole. And what I mean by that are some of these snippets. In terms of benefits to individuals, the annual income of a worker with a bachelor's degree averages 80% higher than that of a high school graduate. We've known for a long time that disparity, but to quantify it is quite surprising. And we also know over a lifetime, the gap in earnings between those with a high school diploma and a BA exceeds $1 million. So if you improve rates at which citizens earn bachelor's degrees and are successful in higher education, you can certainly significantly improve their income and, assumingly, their quality of life. It's important to note, however, that the demographic distribution of who goes to college and who doesn't is not equal. For example, only 54% of high school graduates from the lowest income families enroll in college. And compare that to 82% of those from families with incomes of more than $86,000. So, individuals who are already better off financially improve their financial position through higher education. Lower income students can do the same, but there is a huge need to reach those low income students and to support their opportunities for access to higher education and success in higher education. Now, to think a little bit about benefits or returns to the state, you can think of a couple of different indicators that are interesting. For example, college graduates earn more, they pay more taxes than high school graduates.
Not in Alaska.
Okay.
While you're stopped, Julie, I should have said that there's never a problem getting the senators at this table to interrupt you. So thank you, Senator Bundy, for doing that. Feel free to continue.
Well, while I have you interrupted, Julie, you know, when you come here and speak, we give you smoked salmon.
That's right, Senator.
I just wanted to also point out that Senator Seekins is with us now, has joined us. Thank you, Julie, and we will stop you if any questions arise. Please go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. This finding really comes from some research that was done by the RAND organization. And just so you know how they've looked at this, overall they say every dollar spent on equalizing college entrance rates across racial and ethnic groups yields between $2 and $3 in public savings. And so that's how they have looked at this, a combination of reduced expenditure and increased revenue, which leads into the second point on that page, that slide, that college graduates are more financially independent and they rely less on public services and subsidies. These are things such as pregnancies, there are less pregnancies, college graduates smoke less, they're healthier, there are certainly lower incarceration rates, but other long-term quality of life factors that college education is correlated to in terms of a drain on public services. And finally, college graduates have higher levels of civic participation than high school graduates. We know that their numbers are higher in voting, in things like blood donation, charitable contributions, and volunteerism back to the state. So those are just a few of the ways that legislators have found it interesting to think about the return back to the state on the investment made in higher education. What I want to do is highlight six different dimensions for evaluating how well your state is doing on higher education policy. And I do take these indicators from the National Center for Public Policy in Higher Education. They are the ones who produced the report Measuring Up 2004, which grades the states on their success on these different dimensions. Now, I want to be really clear that I like this analysis because it causes conversation. It gets folks thinking and talking about why their scores are what they are. But I also acknowledge that this study and this framework isn't perfect. There are lots of things we could quibble about in terms of the data that are used or the indicators or why Alaska is different from other states or why Alaska scored poorly. Those conversations are great, and those are the kinds of conversations that I hope will be sparked by the Measuring Up report and by some of the things that we talk about here. Also, it's important that I don't mean to suggest that these categories are independent of each other. Clearly, they are very interrelated. For example, many things affect participation in college. Most importantly, the cost of college or the affordability of college. So I don't mean to assume that these things can really be thought of separately from each other. Thirdly, we know Alaska has very unique characteristics, and whether that be your geography or your history or your structure or the kinds of institutions that you have or your population, all of those things certainly work together to impact your particular scores. And finally, the focus here is intentionally not on money or funding. More money isn't the solution for improving higher education results. Better use of money is certainly a better solution. And that's really why we don't profess to grade states on the amount of money that they're putting into higher education. That's certainly very intentional. Okay, the first indicator that I'd like to look at is an indicator called preparation. When legislators look at this indicator, they think very much, isn't this more an indication of how well the K-12 system is doing than of the higher ed system? And they're right, that's very true. But we think it should be a state priority that students are prepared to enter college or other post-secondary activities. We also think higher ed can send very important signals to K-12. In terms of how well students are prepared for entering college. So we use an indicator called preparation that looks at how well prepared high school students are to enter college or other post-secondary activities. The indicators used in the Measuring Up report are the degree to which students are enrolled in challenging high school courses, particularly math and science, because math and science have been shown to link very closely to college-going rates and success in college. We look at scores on national and state assessments, such as NAEP, and also statewide tests. We look at participation in college entrance exams and advanced placement exams. and also the number of high-quality teachers that are in the K-12 system, as measured by teachers who are teaching in the field where they received their major. On the next slide, you'll see that according to Measuring Up, Alaska gets a B- in preparation. Overall, the strengths that are observed are that compared with other states, Alaska's eighth graders do well on national assessments in math. Alaska performs well on the number of students taught by high-quality teachers. And over the past decade, the state's substantial improvement on this measure has outpaced the nationwide increase, which you should be proud of for sure. However, as a weakness, low-income eighth graders perform very poorly on national assessments in math. And over the past decade, Alaska's shown a substantial decline on this measure. In contrast with what has been going on nationally, in terms of an increase nationally.
Julie, before you go on, are you going to go on away from preparation right now? Because I had a question on that.
No, I was going to look at two other indicators, but stay on preparation for just a few more minutes. So go ahead.
Yeah. Please go ahead.
Well, there were two other interesting indicators that I picked up from the Measuring Up report that you have in front of you, and I'll just mention them briefly. Extremely small proportions of 11th and 12th graders score well on advanced placement tests, but fairly large proportions score well on college entrance exams. So there's some interesting information there about how your students are doing on those college prep tests. And the other factor that I thought was interesting to note was that among young adults, 11% receive a GED rather than a high school diploma, and that's the highest percentage in the nation. So with those things on the table, I'm happy to respond to some questions.
Well, I thank you very much, Julie. The 11% GED is very interesting to see that we are the highest in the nation. But I was on the page on preparation we received the 2004 Alaska under changes in graded measures. Just interesting insight there that percentage of low-income eighth graders performing well in national assessments in math declined substantially. And just below that, the percentage of secondary school students taught by qualified teachers has increased substantially. I don't really have any comment on that other than to say it's interesting dichotomy there that those two things are occurring at the same time.
You're right. An interesting observation, and it's hard to know if the gains that the state has made in qualified teachers excludes math or not, but a very interesting question to maybe ask about, certainly.
Okay, and then looking at the chart, it shows that the number of scores in the top 20% nationally on SAT, ACT, college entrance exam in 04 is 181, and nationwide it's 227. That's a pretty stark difference, isn't it?
The numbers are significant, I think, yeah.
Thank you. Any comments anybody has? Questions of Julie at this point?
I have a question for you, Mr. Chairman. I picked up a couple of other things. Policy alert supplement from the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education and investment in state post-secondary education from the National Center for Higher Education Management Systems. I don't know if all the members have those.
Policy alert.
Yeah.
Yes, we do have that. And the other one was
this one, investment in post-secondary ed.
Yes. Yeah. We should all have all three
thank
of those.
You.
Right.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Julie. Please go ahead.
And I do plan to use information from those other two pieces that you just mentioned in just a few minutes here, actually.
Okay.
I guess we can move on to participation. Participation is, a lot of folks talk about this in terms of access to higher education opportunities. Participation really measures whether residents of all ages have sufficient opportunity to enroll in education or training beyond high school. And the indicators that are used in the Measuring Up report are the rate that high school students go on to college, enrollment levels of traditional age college students, and enrollment levels of working age students. The idea is to look both at traditional students and how well they're doing, but also to look very separately at the adult population. And Measuring Up gives Alaska a C on participation. They find that the state's strengths are that a fairly large percentage of working age adults are currently enrolled part-time in college. However, Alaska has seen the steepest decline in the nation on this measure over the past decade. And Alaska's weaknesses over the past decade, the likelihood of ninth graders enrolling in college within 4 years has dropped more than the national decline on this measure. The state's decrease is primarily due to a decline in the percentage of students graduating from high school. And to look a little further at participation, as you'll see on the next slide, I've taken some information from the policy alert that looks at what we call the educational pipeline. And what's interesting about using this pipeline analogy is that you can really look at the leaks in your educational system. Where is the state really losing students? And there are different points to look at this. So for Alaska, for every 100 ninth grade students, we know that 61 graduate from high school 4 years later. Now, just for comparison purposes, I'll tell you the national average, which is 68. But we also like to have states think about the top performing state, the best performing state on these indicators as well. And for your information, in that state, the number is 90. So for Alaska, 61 students graduate from high school 4 years later. The national average is 68. The top performing state is 90 students. On to the next point. Of those students who graduate from high school 4 years later, 30 students immediately enter college. The national average is 40. The top performing state is 60. We don't know in Alaska this third point, which is how many students are still enrolled in their second year. But the average nationally is 27. The top performing state is 44.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Bundy?
Julie, you don't have that information. Where do you get it in other states?
You know, we don't have that for Alaska, and I honestly don't know exactly why not. I believe that typically that number, and someone there from the higher ed community may be able to help me on this, but I believe that number is reported to the Department of Education. I'm not sure why we didn't have that for Alaska.
Well, thank you, Julie. And I think the University of Alaska is prepared to provide some of those that information and material to us, so we'll have that at a time later. Please identify yourself.
My name is Pat Pitney. I'm with the University of Alaska, and the number in particular here on this sheet is 17. We have roughly a 70% first-year retention rate for baccalaureate degree students and just over 50% for associate degree students. So the number is 30 and then 17.
So how many students are still enrolled in the second year, and the answer to that is 17?
17.
Yeah. Okay.
And the source that they use is a particularly odd source, is it's a commercial survey of the ACT test vendor survey. It's not one that our universities use. We do respond to national surveys on retention regularly. We report it for missions and majors. So it's a common figure and one that's readily available, just not in that particular source.
Well, thank you, Pat. And I'm sure we'll find that throughout this report where there's no information given, and I'm sure the university can provide that help for us as we move through this.
We have them.
Thank you, Pat. Senator Bundy?
If I might, Julie or Pat, your final figure with the 12 students that graduate, that's out of the 30 that enter immediately after high school. Is that correct?
It is correct, and actually the particular data source there is slightly in error, and it overstates our graduation. It's closer to 6 or 8. So that was good news, and it would be nice that we could hold that, but it actually does overstate it.
And is there a figure available for all students that enter? And this is a traditional
student. This is our 25% of our total.
The kids right out of high school, but we have non-traditional people going to school. So what's our graduation rate total of people who enter?
It's relatively arbitrary, since people come in and they can take 8 years. In fact, it's quite typical. In some cases, our part-time students will take 8 years to complete a typical four-semester degree. And so it's the rate, how many people who ever walked in the door actually complete with a degree is significantly lower, actually.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate your comments. And as we talked, Julie, you mentioned the uniqueness of Alaska. Certainly, we know that's true, and I think all of us who've been with the university know that many people are on a long-term a path to get a bachelor's degree, and I know many people who have taken 10 years to get it completed, and that's just often the case here. Thank you, Pat. Any other comments you care to make?
Not right now.
Thanks very much. Okay. Well, thank you, and Julie, we'll go back to you then.
Okay. Hey, Pat, thank you so much for filling in those gaps. I really appreciate that. Senator Bundy pointed out that final indicator, and Pat brought some clarity to the numbers that are here. But again, I think that this, thinking of this as the student pipeline, really helps to see, again, the leaks and where the state is losing students, and to think about policies that could be targeted to those particular places.
Absolutely. Thank you.
The next indicator is affordability. How affordable is
Wait, I'm sorry. Before we go on to affordability, I don't have any questions on that, but it was an interesting fact. I'm looking again at a page from the measuring up that shows that the percentage of working age adults who are enrolled part-time in college level education or training has declined by 29%, the largest decline in the nation over the past decade. That's a pretty telling figure, 29%. It does seem to me, I mean, and I don't know, maybe the university can answer this, but it seems to me that that probably had more working age students in the university for the last 30 years than most states might have. But the fact that it's declined by almost 30% is a pretty remarkable figure. And I'm not asking anyone to answer that, but it just, to me, it really pops out as a major issue. And I'd be interested in knowing where we're going with that. I mean, I think nothing but congratulations to the university and to President Hamlin for the bringing high school students right out of high school into college. That's a wonderful thing that has been accomplished. But I just wonder if maybe we've lost something in that transition, and the fact that there are 29% fewer, that's a pretty telling figure. And I'd appreciate knowing more about that as we go through this process. The issue is a fairly large percentage of working age adults are enrolled part-time, and we know that. And then another issue that pops up at the end of that participation is in Alaska, 1,680 more students are leaving the state than are entering to attend college. And about 40% of Alaska high school graduates go to college. High school graduates who go to college attend out of state. So about 48% of our students go out of state, and we're losing about 1,700 students leaving the state rather than entering the state. Any comments on that, Julie?
Well, Alaska definitely has big numbers on the students who you graduate from high school who leave the state to go to college, and that really stands out more than any other state I've ever looked at as a just a particular issue for you all to look at. It would be interesting to think about whether those graduates come back to the state, and I don't know that. The university might know that, but that would be a question as well.
We always say we don't care how they do it outside, but we also want to know how they do it outside. So that's why we go outside so much for school. Well, thank you, Julie. Just a couple of interesting points. Please go ahead.
You bet. Well, I'll move to affordability, which gets at how affordable higher education is for students and families. This is an indicator that's not based on tuition, which a lot of stories in the media, particularly over the last couple years, as tuition definitely has has risen all around the country. Those reports really tend to focus on tuition and overall costs.
I'm sorry, Julie. I have a question here, Senator Seegers. You wanted to repeat that?
I was a little slow on the draw.
Could have been my explanation there. Let me try again.
Could you back up? Thank you, Julie.
If I back up just to the participation level, I'm wondering if there's a trend that we can see there. I see the raw number on the 2004, but I would suspect that there's a trend as to the number of students, as the percentage of Alaska high school graduates who go to college that attend out of state. And I just have an intuitive feeling to that effect by watching a lot of the young people in my own community who today are enrolling in the university, where in a time past I think less of them were, and also the fact I think that the university today has a more effective, and it has a marketing program trying to reach out to those students, where in 10 or 12 years ago, I don't think that they really had one. And so I think that has changed. So that trend would be something I'd like to have a little bit of an idea there, rather than just the raw number.
Oh, I agree. I'd be very interested to see, and the impact that the Scholars Program has had on that number. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator. Go ahead, Julie.
Okay, sure. Back to affordability and college costs. We urge legislators to really think about the affordability of college in terms of the ability of families to pay for college. And that, of course, varies dramatically depending on family income and family situations. So what we'll talk about here is thinking about affordability in terms of net cost. That is, the sticker price, which is tuition, minus whatever financial aid at the state and federal level are available, comes down to the net cost that families actually have to pay. And you will see that Measuring Up has given Alaska an F on affordability. Now, don't take that too personally, because in this survey, Measuring Up gave almost all states an F or very poor grades. Nobody does well, in their view, on this issue of affordability. What they look at in thinking about affordability are a couple of things. First, tuition levels relative to family income levels. And that's what we're talking about, family ability to pay. They look at the availability of need-based financial aid, and they look at levels of student debt. So they have determined no strengths in Alaska on affordability, and under weaknesses, suggest that the net college cost for low and middle income students to attend public four-year colleges and universities represent about a third of their annual income. And these institutions enroll over 90% of students in the state. And again, net college cost equals tuition and room and board minus financial aid.
Gary.
Julie, Senator Bundy has a question.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Julie, looking at affordability in the column under 2004, community college, public, the 20-21%, how do you define that? Is that 21% of the people who attend, or 21% of our residents?
It's percent of family income, and this is an average of all income groups, and so I actually want to steer you to another chart in that publication to understand this a little further. But they are talking about the percent of income which is needed to pay for college expenses. So in community colleges, taking all families together in Alaska, the average is 20% of your income is required to attend a community college. 21% to attend a public four-year, and 41% to attend a private four-year.
Yeah, and then Mr. Chairman, then I look at over in your other handout, the investment in post-secondary education, and
What page are you on?
The first page here, on the chart in the upper left-hand corner, it says the average tuition and fees public four-year school in Alaska, it's $4,600, and the Nationwide average is 4,900. But so our tuition is lower, but you feel our affordability is less too.
Your tuition is definitely lower than the national average. That's correct. But when you look at the percent of family income needed to pay for college, it really shows a different picture.
Yeah. So, what we're talking about then is above and beyond tuition. It's cost of living.
That's correct.
Well, yeah, that we're always going to get an F because it costs more to live up here.
But with room and board, right? That's a very fair comment.
So the again, looking at the chart that that the Senator Bunny referred to, Alaska being at 44,685, and other states, U.S. average at 4,900. That probably includes all education, whether private or public, right?
No, they're broken out to private.
It's just what?
That's just public. If just you go over to the right, then you got private, not profit and then private.
I see. You're right. Okay. Okay, but so then back to the chart in the measuring up, what we're saying is that in Alaska at a public four-year college, it's about one-fifth of the family's income.
Overall. That's
right.
Correct. Overall.
Okay.
But now I really would like to take you to the next page of that measuring up handout, which is page 9, because it's a different picture for different income levels of families. And that's where I think the real story emerges. So if you see page 9, it's affordability. It's from the measuring up report, and it says a closer look at family ability to pay. And this, by the way, does include, as Senator Bundy mentioned, room and board, definitely more expensive in Alaska, but a cost to students nonetheless, a cost they need to bear nonetheless. And what you see there, just looking in the middle column, for example, under public 4 years, for the percent of the population that has the lowest income, they need to cover 50%, I'm sorry, let me try this again. 50% of their income is required to attend a public four-year college or university. And you look down the next lines and you see at the very bottom of that, for the highest income families, only 7% of their income is needed to pay net college costs. So the burden really is on the lower income population, and that's, I think, the power of looking at the numbers broken down as opposed to that overall average from the page before.
So that, I'm sorry, Senator Seekins.
So while that may be true, are you saying that that's a barrier to them going to college? I think we have a very generous student loan program that would be more than adequate to get into that range.
I would say it's a significant barrier, and I think that loans, absolutely, you've got a generous program, but a lot of those families will not take loans and can't afford loans. I think what impacts that population more than loans is need-based financial aid.
So that's if you go back to the earlier page on 8, it indicates that Alaska has made no investment in need-based financial aid and does not offer low-priced college opportunities. Be interesting to know further about that. What attempts there are to impact those who can least afford apparently to go to college.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Seekins. Any further?
That's it.
That's a very important issue, and I hope we'll learn more about it as we go through this the next few weeks. Thank you, Julie.
You bet. Just to sum up on affordability, Alaska is not alone in some very tough issues that are facing the state that are really kind of coming together and colliding to create some real difficulties around affordability for students. One, states have decreased the share of higher education funding in state budgets. It's happened in all of the states. Overall, in the 10-year period that ended in 2004 and 2005, we saw tuition and fees at public four-year colleges rise by 51%. So tuition is increasing significantly, in part as a response to decrease state budgets to higher education. More students are borrowing more money. Almost 64% of bachelor's degree recipients now have to borrow something to pay for college, compared to about 49% a decade ago. So those numbers are definitely on the rise. And let's see, there's a number in here about the average loan that students have in Alaska. Yes, here it is. It's about $3,300 in 2004. That's the average loan that bachelor's degree students have when they finish college. States all around the country are putting more money into merit-based financial aid instead of need-based financial aid, and that's definitely a trend and something that has been dropping over the decade. And then lower-income students are increasingly being priced out of college, which is what we see in that closer look at family ability to pay. Anything else on affordability?
Well, I think just what strikes my mind, I mean, and this is more for the university, as we now we have a 10% of high school students, highest achieving students, are offered free tuition at the University of Alaska. The governor has requested that that be increased to 5%, and certainly that seems to be very valuable to me, but I'm just wondering, should there be some consideration, instead of the 15%, of maybe doing some needs-based financial aid? I'm not sure, but and I'm not sure if it's even possible, but I certainly appreciate hearing from the university what they are thinking on that subject of needs-based versus, as you said, Julie, merit-based. Okay, thank you, Julie.
Sure, sure. Senator, just a comment. States are thinking again about those merit programs and looking at the numbers around students who receive those scholarships, and whether they could afford to attend otherwise without the scholarships. And it's a tough conversation to have because those merit scholarships really hit a population of students to motivate them, and the philosophy behind them is really important, I think, in a state, to reward merit, not just need. But as others will say, it definitely does draw money away from students who probably would be going otherwise to students who simply can't go because they can't afford it. So it's definitely an interesting conversation to have in your state.
You're absolutely right, Julie. Thank you.
You bet. The next indicator is completion.
Senator Bundy?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Before we go past affordability, and I had to step out, so I'm sorry if you covered this. Does the Alaska Scholars Program figure into this affordability factor anywhere, where the top 10%, regardless of financial need, receive free tuition?
I'm sure it does. I don't know if Julie is prepared to answer that, but yeah, I'd assume that you're right, that if the top 10% or even top 15% is governor requests, there certainly should be a variety of family incomes in that group.
Yeah, were you aware of that factor, and did that factor in anywhere, Julie, or could it?
You know, Senator, I'm trying to think through real quickly here exactly how that would impact on these numbers, and I might need to just think about that a little bit. I think that overall, I'm not sure how many students are touched by that scholarship, so I'm not sure that I have a good what the impact would be of that in these numbers. But I definitely could kind of think about that and look at that and certainly talk to you some more about, you know, about how that is viewed in these numbers here.
Perhaps the university has that number, or how many are...
And I hate to put the university on the spot, but let's put the university on the spot. Now, we'd be glad, if you're unprepared, we'd be glad to hear that answer.
I'd be glad to answer that particular question, because those numbers will not show up in this data. What they're counting are state investment in financial aid, and the Scholars is privately funded, so it doesn't show, it won't be reflected in any of their data.
But what's the total number of students that are attending a scholarship, do you know?
There's approximately 450 that start each year, and we have over 1,300 that are actively enrolled, that are on the scholarship. There's 1,600 who have come in on the scholars program, still enrolled, either finishing up their degree or going into their graduate degree.
And you had 400 a year.
Yeah.
A little over 400 a year.
And I think Julia's key point that she made at the very beginning is that so many states got an F on this. It's because at the time they did the study, there was no money in needs-based financial aid in Alaska at all. So now the state has made an investment last year, $550,000. The governor's proposing another $1 million. It's not enough to make much of a blip. We might go from an F to a D minus, but it's still not very much. But that's the key driver on this particular element in the study is.
Aside from the scholars program, there's a budget increment by the governor for needs-based.
The legislature last year approved $550,000 through ACPE, and the governor is requesting to increase that to another million this year in needs-based.
Thank you. And then I suppose, Pat, at some point we could talk about the 450 scholars, and they probably come from a wide variety of economic backgrounds. Are those figures available?
Yes.
I'm putting that down as a question.
Okay.
We can do a whole survey, so what they look like, where they're coming from, how they're succeeding. We're now tracking them into jobs, so we know that almost 90% of the Alaska scholars are actually living in Alaska, as opposed to, Julie asked the question, what happens to the students who go out of state? We also, through post-secondary, know that about 80%+ of the students who leave the state to go to school never come back.
Mm-hmm.
So we will do a follow-up data with some of that. It'll be interesting to you.
Thank you, Wendy. Appreciate that.
Yeah, if we could pick and choose which ones didn't come back, that might be a positive.
You might be in that list. I'd be careful of having a list like that, Senator Bundy.
I'm the one that's picking and choosing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Strong families. My daughter went out and she came back.
She came back.
Okay. Good. Both my children did as well.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Julie. Please go ahead.
All four of mine went to the University of Alaska, and thereby stayed.
So, some children are more adventurous than others.
All right. Let's get back to Julie.
Thank you. Those clarifications on the scholars program were really helpful. That was great to hear. And that definitely helps understand that a lot more. The next indicator is completion. Completion means, do students make progress toward and complete their certificates and degrees in a timely manner? And Alaska, on this particular indicator from Measuring Up, received an F. The indicators on this on completion are, one, the degree to which students return year after year, which is also talked about as the persistence of student persistence, and also completion of bachelor's degrees within 5 and 6 years. Over the last several years, as less and less students are really able to complete their bachelor's degree in 4 years, which I did, and many of you I know did as well, which was much more normal. We've begun to look at completion in terms of a 5 and 6 year term, and that's actually now how they're measuring completion at the federal level. So that explains why we're not talking about 4 years, but we're looking at 5 and 6 years. That's how the data is reported now that is being used to compare the states. And again, the report gives Alaska an F, primarily because they didn't see really any strengths to talk about, but saw a couple of important weaknesses. The first, compared with other states, a low percentage of first-time, full-time students earn a bachelor's degree within 6 years of enrolling in college. And a very small proportion of students complete certificates and degrees relative to the number enrolled. And we talked about that a little while ago, too, but that's just, again, putting this in the context of an indicator called completion and how well Alaska is doing on completion.
Thank you, Julie. That's an important issue. Now, one thing I assume you're aware, or maybe you're not, that the University of Alaska is an open admission university, so that doesn't excuse us from the completion issue entirely, but is that unusual among other states?
And I'm not sure I understand how you think about an open admission policy and what that exactly means, or how that impacts students or their student experience at the university.
Send us your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse.
If they show up, they get in.
I see. I see.
Wendy Redmond, any comment?
Julie, 15 years ago, the University of Alaska, which is the single state higher ed, public higher ed system, merged its community colleges and universities into a single system. So there are not separate community colleges. And in the process of doing that, what they did was basically have open community college type admittance for all institutions.
I see.
So it does skew the comparative data when you're trying to look at universities to universities. And, you know, we try to kind of parse the data a little bit. Our completion rate is still going to be low compared to national, but when we're looking at comparable university programs with other comparable university programs, it begins to look quite different. So it's just an unusual model. I'm not familiar with another model in the nation that looks like we do.
No, I'm not either, now that you have clarified that somewhat.
Thank you, Wendy. Well, that's something to certainly keep in mind. As again, it doesn't say we're forgiven all sins, but it's a very important thing to realize that open admissions does have an impact on completion. Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do notice, though, another thing that I mentioned earlier, and that is the comment that there's a substantial increase in the proportion that are completing. So, you know, when I look at someone, what is the trend, again, in the institution? And I also would note that another thing that I recognize in that I have about 115 or so employees in my dealership, none of which require a college degree, but many of whom take a class here and a class there, some of them have taken 12 to 15 years to complete their degree, and some of them 4, 5, 6 years to get an associate degree, simply because, you know, because this university has the ability for them to do so on a one class this year and two next year type basis, and still be able to work toward a degree, which I think is a plus benefit. So if we take a look at and saying that is a negative that we don't complete them within a certain period of time, I think we'd have to balance that with the fact that the system allows that open entry over a long period of time to provide people with the opportunity to work toward a degree or just to get a class that helps them in what their particular job skill is. So, I'm not downgrading it, but I do believe that it's a positive that we do have a system that allows that easy entry for people to help themselves in what they're doing, and that might not include getting a degree.
Thank you, Senator. I do notice an NA on that list, and ask the university if we give that information. I'm sure they have it. That's a freshman at four-year colleges returning for their sophomore year in 1994 in Alaska is 59%. Information not available in 2004, and I'm sure the university has that. And just any of these blanks, I'd appreciate your filling in for us. Wendy.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to add, I'm trying to keep track here of the things. I think, like Senator Seekins has indicated, we can update the data. This was 2003 data for a 2004 report, so we do have updates for it. And one of the interesting points that we'll try to address next time as well that Senator Seekins just brought up is this issue of getting students in the front door and out in 4 or 5 years is actually quite a big problem in other states with higher populations and greater demands on their public institutions where they don't want students just hanging around. We don't really have that problem here. Students are not, because of the high part-time student population, we don't have a lot of students who are just taking credits just because it's an easy lifestyle. That's just not a phenomenon that we're very familiar with here. Students are in, taking a class, leaving work and coming back. It's a very different kind of situation, very unusual.
That is very odd. I would still be in graduate school if it wasn't for the draft.
Me too.
Okay, thank you. Julie, please go ahead.
You bet. Well, I was going to move to benefits, unless there's any other discussion on completion.
I think we're ready to move ahead.
Good. Okay. Benefits, or returns back to the state from the investment in higher education, is something we hear from legislators all the time about how to think about that and how to measure that and how to quantify that. And it's a good question. And that's what this particular indicator tries to get a picture of. What benefits does the state receive as a result of having a highly educated population? And the indicators used here are, one, the number of adults with bachelor's degrees and advanced degrees, two, the percent of population that votes and contributes to charity, and three, adult literacy rates. And Alaska does really quite well on this indicator and gets a grade of a B. Alaska's population are strong participators in voting and in charitable giving and other public kinds of activities. Measuring Up, however, notes as a weakness for Alaska that over the past decade, the gap has widened between whites and minority ethnic groups in the percent who have a bachelor's degree. There is a point that is made on page 11 of the Measuring Up report on benefits that says that if all ethnic groups had the same educational attainment and earnings as whites, total personal income in the state would be about $802 million higher, and the state would realize an estimated $281 million in additional tax revenues. So a way of thinking about, again, the return on investment for dealing with that particular issue in the state.
Except we don't tax our residents. So. But that's interesting. That's a key point, I think, Julie, absolutely, that the gap between whites and minority students, and that the fact that we are, that's now the widest gap in the country, that's a very telling issue, and we'll hope to come back to that.
I would just ask for any other comments on benefits, or otherwise I'll move on to the last indicator, learning.
I think we're ready to go ahead. Thank you, Julie.
Okay, sure. Well, learning is a sixth indicator that the Measuring Up report talks about. However, they have not given states grades on this indicator. They've given states a grade, but they've given all of the states an incomplete. And the point that they are trying to make is that this is probably the most fundamental of all questions for a state, certainly for a legislature, in knowing how well their higher ed system is doing. How well are students learning in their higher ed experience? But the point of giving all the states an incomplete is that states simply aren't well measuring this indicator. States really don't know. They haven't systematically looked at data collection to know how well they're doing. And so that's the point of including learning and the point of giving all of the states an incomplete. Now, there are possible indicators that could be used to think about this, and some states are beginning to collect information. Such as literacy levels of adult residents. We do have some of that data certainly in the census. Graduates ready for advanced practice. For example, how well are graduates doing on exams or whether those be exams to get into master's programs or PhD programs or exams to get into professions when they graduate. And then another indicator would be performance of college graduates, looking at a variety of different ways that you might look at that or test for that or somehow try to collect that information. But the point, again, is learning is important, and states aren't doing a very good job of collecting the information to know how well they're doing.
Well, thank you, Julie. It's hard to respond when there's nothing but question marks there.
You're right. I guess it's more something to think about.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on teacher prep, There are students now having to take the NICAT, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll do some follow-up on that. So,
That's a pretty strenuous test.
All of the accrediting agencies are now actually requiring more assessment of learning, and so we have a lot of things in place that we can go over the committee with. We track on licensures for all of our professional students and so on, so we have some good data on how that's working.
Well, and Julie, in other states, there have been things in the paper lately about the dumbing down of our college graduates. Is this information available in other states, and what does it look like?
You mean indicators on this learning indicator, this learning dimension?
I was looking at the problem-solving writing. There's been things in the press lately about the literacy level of college graduates seems to be decreasing.
Yes, that's true. And I don't have some of those numbers in front of me. That certainly would be something we could look at or discuss in a future conversation.
And Mr. Chairman, I know in problem-solving we'll score high because most of our citizens know how to get all the state funding they want and never have to pay for it. Sorry, Julie, that's an inside joke.
And it's one we hear daily from Senator Bundy, too.
Quite all right.
Okay, thank you, Julie. Go ahead.
Well, I would just leave you with some next steps, and I hope that NCSL can be a part of some of those next steps. We'd sure be very happy to be. But this really goes back to some things that I mentioned at the very beginning of this discussion. Using this information to ask more questions and get more data, and a lot of those questions have already started, I think, to be asked here. Those are exactly the right questions to be asking. What is the story behind the numbers? That's really, I think, the benefit of using this measuring up report and thinking through their framework. Talk with others. Talk with the higher ed community, as you're doing here, to really uncover what's going on behind those numbers. There are very interesting stories. There are very interesting reasons for what we're seeing. But it also really helps think about where the state wants to target policy remedies or policy reforms. Part of a conversation, an important conversation, certainly should be identifying the fundamental state priorities for higher education. So having an important conversation with a large group of actors and stakeholders in higher education in Alaska about what is it that Alaska really wants to tackle? Is it completion or is it not completion? Maybe not. Is it affordability or maybe not affordability or maybe pieces of affordability and not other pieces of affordability? At any rate, what are the priorities for the state in terms of what it wants to address, what it needs to address? And then once that conversation is done, you can really begin to talk about specific policy approaches. There are all sorts of things that states are trying and that people recommend that states can try to help alleviate some of the problems, the weaknesses in the higher ed performance. And so learning about those and talking about those, that's certainly one way NCSL would be very happy to help. We've got lots of information on what states are doing, what seems to be working, what's effective, what seems to have great promise for dealing with some of the issues that we're talking about. So as you move forward in your conversations on all of these levels, we would be happy to be a resource and provide additional data, provide additional comparisons, and specifically policy approaches that other states are using to address some of these issues. And with that, I will stop and answer questions or participate in whatever way you would like me to, Senator.
Well, thank you very much, Julie. Senator Bundy has a question.
Thank you. On the participation participation category, as you know, we have a number of a large percentage of older students, and used to have more, that were coming to college for lots of reasons, maybe a specific program, maybe a certificate, maybe just enrichment. Do you factor things like that in the completion ratio, or can you, or do you need more information to be able to do that?
Well, as I recall, and I'm going back to take a look, the completion was broken down for adults and traditional students, and if it wasn't, it should be, because the adult learners who are using higher ed for different purposes in very different ways are a very, very important segment now of users of higher education. The landscape is just so not the traditional student that it used to be. There are so many different ages of students. There are so many different reasons for students in the higher ed system. There are so many different ways that they use the system, their attendance patterns. So if we don't have that story, you're exactly right. We should really try to get at that and understand that.
Thank you, Julie. If you'll hold on just for a few minutes, I want to check and see if President Hamilton is with us. Are you online, President Hamilton?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear. Thank you. Thank you very much for sticking through this. Any comments or thoughts you'd like to share with us at this point, Mr. President?
I guess the only one is, I think I quite agree with Julie, that it's wonderful to continue the dialogue on that, and I would say continue rather than begin with some of these questions, because we have been following for a number of years now, it's at least 6 years, Missions and Measures, which was the Alaska State Legislature's attempt to do precisely this thing, precisely this issue, have walked and talked our way through all of those measures. As you know, you stopped requiring the measurement of them several years ago. We have continued because we found them terribly valuable just to be able to have these sorts of data. I did not hear a single solitary issue mentioned or question mentioned that I haven't talked to with you and your colleagues about over time, and I think I'm just very much looking forward to continuing that dialogue.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. It has been fascinating. I've really appreciated the comments around the table here. Let's see. Everyone has meetings, and I know. Julie, where are you, and what time is it, wherever you are?
I'm in our Denver office, and it's just 8:15.
Well, thank you for going far beyond what would normally be expected of people. I really appreciate your being with us, and I think this is a great start. We'll have a chance in the future to talk about all of the issues that were brought up, pretty fascinating issues. So thank you very much, Julie, and I'll be in contact with you. Thanks for spending your evening with us.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Senator.
Thank you, President Hamilton, as well as Pete Kelly, who was here, and Wendy Redman, and Pat, for all of your participation. We'll be talking with you soon about where we go from here. Wendy, any comments?
Yeah, I just wanted to add one comment, and Julie didn't cover these, but I think that the policy questions that were outlined on page 4 of the Measuring Up report, I think get at some of the highlights of the data that Julie was going over and are really sort of the essence of a lot of the issues we're looking at internally anyhow, and they have to do with partnerships with the schools, dealing with the gap between the success rate for Alaska Native students. And so I think we'd like to come back at some future point. If you want to take a look at some of those questions, I think they'll be a good guide for some things we can get some productive discussion on, too.
Thank you. Winnie, now, where was that?
On page 4 of the Measuring Up report, they were left, the report had 5 or 6 policy questions that were included in there.
Absolutely. Very important questions. We'll come back to that. All right, again, thank you all very much. I appreciate everyone spending their time this late in the evening. We're going on to another meeting at 6:30 here, so at this time, I'll call this meeting to close. Thank you.